This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. For people who stutter, the prospect of speaking in public is a nightmare. And for millions of people, trying to suppress stuttering just makes the problem worse. So the idea of deliberately seeking out public speaking opportunities seems out of the question. But for Peter Reitzes, it was the only answer. He created a weekly podcast called Stutter Talk.
Welcome back to Stutter Talk. Peter Reitzes here with Vivian Siskin. This is episode 504 for March 24th, 2015. The topic is management versus choice. Vivian Siskin is a clinical professor in the Department of Hearing and Speech Sciences at the University of Maryland and a board-certified specialist.
All right, Stutter Talk, a series of conversations about the science, culture, and personal stories around stuttering. Peter Reitzes is now a speech-language pathologist at an elementary school in Durham. He produces Stutter Talk from his home in Carrboro and is now on the State of Things. Peter, welcome. Good to have you here.
So great to be here with some good voluntary stuttering.
Well, I'm going to talk about that in a minute. We want to take calls because I know people have a lot of questions about this. And so if you have any calls at all, Peter is the person to talk to. And you can do it by calling us at 877-962-9862. You can send us an email at sot@wunc.org to talk to Peter Reitzes about issues around stuttering. So tell us your story.
Well, my story is that I like to think or say I didn't grow up stuttering. I grew up trying not to stutter and chasing fluency and trying to be a non-stuttering person made me miserable. And when I was 23 and my first speech therapist that I ever remembered said to me, stuttering is allowed and it's okay to stutter, and changed my life. And that message is why I can speak here today with you.
Were you in any kind of speech therapy before that?
Well, it depends who you believe. I have progress reports from speech therapy, but I have no recollection of anybody ever talking to me about stuttering unless it was somebody teasing me. So I really have doubts if I ever received speech therapy until I sought it out as a young adult.
So talk about this moment when you were given permission to stutter in public. What was that like? What was the advice you got?
The advice I got was, I can see you doing everything to not stutter, and I think that's why you're here today. And I knew right away, like, my life forever changed because somebody was telling me what I knew inside was saying what you want to say is more important than living a lie.
What kind of effect does it have? I mean, obviously, you have to answer questions in class. You're going to go to a restaurant. The waiter's going to ask you what you want, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, when you're in seventh or eighth grade and you go home because you have a quiz on capitals the next day and it's going to be a written quiz and you learn in one night every capital to every state and your teacher who you adore says, hey, let's do something fun. Let's have an oral quiz. And I knew every answer and pretended I didn't because everything I wanted to say was going to come out stuttered. So I answered incorrectly. So for me, stuttering was much more about the silence. Like, I gauge severity for me by not how much I stutter, but by how much I'm silent. Because for me, stuttering is a success. You know, Robert Dellinger, a speech therapist who stutters in Wake County, he said on Stutter Talk recently, it blew my mind. It's so obvious, but I never said it. Every time we stutter is a chance for success. And Rob's right. You know, that's what I believe.
It also affects you at restaurants. You really were. It was affecting your menu choices. Am I right?
Hey, man, I hated hot dogs, but I sure ate a lot of them because I couldn't say spaghetti when whatever I needed to say, I couldn't say it, or you felt you couldn't. So you would, like many, many stutterers, we say things we don't want to say to be fluent or to not appear as a stutterer.
And you know there were certain letters and apparently this changes over time that give you trouble. Right?
Oh, like D in Delaware where I'm born, and that was a real stutter you just heard me work through. My brother's name was David. So, you know, in college when you're 22 and a professor you adore asks you where you're from and you are stumbling and saying things like, the first date, and she's looking at you like you're crazy because she doesn't know you stutter. So, you know, those experiences after 20 years really made me have to make some changes.
So tell us what we know about stuttering scientifically. What's going on?
Well, scientifically, it's, you know, almost certainly something to do with the brain. There is genetic evidence. You know, Dr. Dennis Drana at the NIH, he came out a year or two ago with some huge research suggesting that maybe about 10% of stuttering can be accounted for by genes. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's totally cool. He's a guest. He's a friend. But where I take it is I go back to the old school speech therapy of Dean Williams, where, you know, just as far as treatment and making change goes, forget the genes. Stuttering is not something that's happening to me. It's something I do. And it's something I can change. I can change how I think about stuttering. And if I want to, I can change how I stutter. But to me, the important part was changing how I think about these issues.
Well, this change question is an interesting border, the idea that this is who I am and what I do.
Yeah.
And that then the question is it something you try to treat? Is it something you try to reduce? Or is the effort at reducing it making it worse?
Sure.
Where are you?
So I'll break it down for you briefly. For preschoolers who stutter, you know, we know from the research that about 80% of them are going to recover without any help at all. So for young children who stutter, it is okay to have a goal to stop stuttering. And really the main goal is to help parents deal productively with it, because parents are the one pulling their hair out. But as an adult, chasing the fluency is really, for me and many others, what makes the problem so much worse. And for me, such an important speech therapy was huge, but meeting other people who stutter changed my life. Can I just give a real quick plug?
Please.
I was very active in the Friends Association when I lived in New York and now. And Friends has a wonderful convention coming up this summer. And it just happens to be in North Carolina. So it's going to be in Raleigh, July 16th through 18th, friendswhostutter.org. And meeting other stutterers, seeing that they're successful and smart and handsome and witty, and doctors and lawyers and actors, like, you know, I held all the bad stereotypes that everybody else did. So meeting successful stutterers who were stuttering and being successful and going into court changed my life.
I'm just wondering, though, to what extent then you also feel like you'd like to reduce it. I'm thinking about particularly people with deafness and other hearing impairments who say, look, I don't want a hearing aid. I don't. This is who I am, and I want to remain this way. Is it like that for you? Are you saying?
Yeah. For me, reducing stuttering is very important, but I had to first stutter. So I stuttered on purpose for 3.5 years, every day, as a rule, while at the same time, I also felt it was okay for me to work on stuttering less or stuttering differently. But I personally had to be a stutterer.
Let's take some phone calls. Sure. Carl is on the line from Morrisville, and he joins us now by phone. Hello, Carl.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So I've been a stutterer since I was about 5 or 6 and had some speech therapy when I was much younger that helped me a lot. And, you know, I'm kind of hearing what you're saying about, you know, getting to a place where you're okay with stuttering, and I try not to let it keep me from doing anything I want to do in life. I just wanted to bring up this kind of new thing that's come up with as phone interactions have changed. You know, it used to be you call up a company, the 800 number, you press 1 for that, press 2 for this. Now there are voice prompts, and you're expected to say certain words at a right time, you know, with the machine. And I personally have a lot of trouble with that.
Sure.
And some of them, you know, you can press 0 or 1 as a backup, and some of them you can't. So I just wanted to hear if that was anyone that the guests had heard about.
I'll admit you, we get phone calls at Stutter Talk, and we just got one from Afghanistan, which blows my mind. It's so awesome. And sometimes if a person stuttering so much, the system we use may accidentally hang up on them, because if they're blocking for 10 seconds and it's a 10-second block, the system isn't made for people who stutter. And it's very unfortunate. And part of our lives is learning how to live with stuttering. And sometimes you have to take the extra step to get what you want. And that's just part of living with this issue.
We pulled out some statistics about 700 million people, about 1% of the population.
Well, yes, that is correct.
1% of the world's population. Mm-hmm. And you talked about this call from Afghanistan. This was an Afghani.
This was someone who was from Afghanistan, born there, called Stutter Talk. I mean, we've gotten calls from Kuwait. It's wild. I would have never thought growing up that I could talk about stuttering, and that I could talk about stuttering with my brothers and sisters in countries I've never visited.
Tell us about the podcast. Why did you start it?
In 2007, it was started by me and my buddies, Greg and Eric, and nobody was talking about stuttering that you could hear. Except for maybe Stuttering John on Howard Stern, who I like him, nobody talked about stuttering. I don't remember there was YouTube. I don't remember ever seeing or hearing stuttering except for Porky Pig. So we decided to bring stuttering into the digital age. So people would contact us in 2007 and they would say, I've never heard anyone stutter before. Thank you. And we still get those. Stutter Talk just got a donation and I wrote back and thanked the guy. And he wrote back and said, no, thank you. My wife and I gave you the donation to do your work because I wouldn't be a musical instructor if it weren't for you.
It's a worldwide phenomenon. Yeah. It's about 70 million people worldwide. And most recently, for instance, you were talking about legislation in Australia, right?
Yeah. To summarize it, a lot of us, including a lot of people in Australia, are very concerned because the Speech Pathology Australia Association, which is they represent speech language pathologists, it appears essentially that they're promoting a one-size-fits-all treatment for stuttering. And we know there's many different treatments that help people who stutter. So when you go to the doctor with your child, do you want the doctor to offer you only one treatment? Or do you want the doctor to have a range of tools? So I go for the range. And obviously, it's a complicated issue, but that's the nuts and bolts of it.
But it's interesting that you can have this global conversation because, of course, it affects people everywhere.
Yeah.
You also did a series on Speech Easy, which is pretty interesting. That was a technological fix, right?
Yeah.
Development. In fact, it was developed right here in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Touted as the answer. But so tell us the story of Speech Easy.
So just one quick thing. I wouldn't call it a fix because we're not broken, but I know you know that. But it was a device that looks like a hearing aid. It fits in your ear and for some people it brings certain amounts of fluency or less stuttering for a certain amount of times. But do you really want a device in your ear? So it changes your frequency. It plays back yourself so you're hearing an echo of yourself in your ear. And for some people it increases fluency or reduces stuttering. But it was touted as a miracle by Oprah Winfrey and other people. And you meet people who use the Speech Easy, and so often it's not a miracle, and the very people who it's claimed to be a miracle for will often tell you, it's now in the back of my sock drawer. I never use it.
Well, you have that conversation on your podcast. Yeah. Let's listen.
When you first started using the Speech Easy that first week, how much of a stuttering reduction did you experience?
It was probably about, I would say, not 95%.
And how long did that last?
About 10 days.
So when did you start to get the feeling that this Speech Easy might not be the miracle approach that it had been so often described?
Well, the main problem was all of the sound, because while it records and amplifies your voice, it records all the sounds around you too.
Okay.
So there was a lot of feedback. If there was a lot of background noise, I just simply couldn't hear anything.
That's Mark Babcock talking to Peter Wrights, as my guest today on The State of Things, about Speech Easy. We're not slamming Speech Easy because it is a device that has some value, and I think it points to your, one size not fitting all. In fact, you spoke with the president, Alan Newton, right, of Janus Development Group, and I want to just hear his response to that because he's very clear about the sort of scope of this product.
We have seen some cases exactly as you described. That users get immediate benefits from the device, and then they experience some slow regression of that fluency over time. So we've done a number of things. Like I said, we've incorporated additional fluency strategies with the device. We've retrained a lot of our speech pathologists on best advice to give clients who use it. We've also developed an entire workbook. We now offer about a 60 to 80 page workbook that comes along with every single device and does a couple things. Number one, it walks them through those strategies that we think is going to work best with the device, but it also walks them through a slow progression of comfortableness, if that's a word. And so what we do is gradually expand their comfort zone. They first talk to friends, then they, and family members, then they may talk to coworkers, and then they may talk to strangers, that kind of thing.
All right. That's Alan Newton, president of Janus Development Group, that makes this speech easy product. So, I mean, the message here is that there is, you know, that, that you have to look at a lot of different ways of approaching this.
Absolutely. And frankly, when you go to YouTube and you find like the Oprah Winfrey clip, I had to finish what she started because I think she did a hatchet job on it. And, you know, you have to follow up. Anybody can have a good time in stuttering treatment for a day, for a week, for a month. But 2 months later, 6 months later, that's when you have to say to them, how's it going? How's the speech easy device going? So I really sought out to finish what Oprah and others had started and then just forgot about.
I'm talking today with Peter Reitzes, the host of Stutter Talk. That conversation is happening right here on The State of Things. Well, so, you know, you get, again, there's this border, you know, we're not broken, so don't fix, but there is something that you want to do. There's a kind of, there are kinds of improvements you want to make, but it seems to me that the central message here is that you start from the idea that I am not broken, that what I'm doing is who I am, and I can do it out loud. And then to the extent to which I want to sort of make it smoother and easier for me to get along, I can work on that starting from a position of this is who I am and embracing who you are.
You're absolutely correct, and I'll just add to that, that for me, I started speech therapy, and my family and friends and girlfriend would say, but you're stuttering more. You need a new speech therapist. And I'd say, I'm stuttering more because I'm becoming healthier. This is what I need to do to talk. I'm so tired of not answering the phone and not making the phone call and changing my words. So I choose to speak, and sometimes I speak with a stutter. And when I stutter, you know I'm saying what I want to say.
Yeah. You are a speech therapist now in a school in Durham. So tell us about your approach, the approach you take with kids.
Well, I work at Hillendale Elementary in Durham, the best school in the world. And, you know, the teachers I work with are wonderful. They're not stuttering experts, but they know to listen to children and to value what children say. So I just worked with a child who was scared to death of giving a presentation in class. So she would bring her friends to speech class, and we'd work out a plan. And the plan was, well, let's talk to your teachers and let's figure out how we can make this experience successful for you. And this student was not chasing fluency. This child just wanted to speak in class and be comfortable. So the teacher agreed and helped problem solve. And so the child gave the presentation at Hillendale with friends next to the child to support the child. And so really, you're really working with each individual child's needs and what they want to do. And this child wanted to bring friends to speech class and have friends at the presentation so she could have her turn, so he could have his turn. And that's what's so important, is participating, is not being silent.
I would think it matters an awful lot that you stutter and are those children's speech pathologists. How unusual is that for a person who stutters to be a speech pathologist?
Well, I'm doing a series now on what you wish your speech pathologist knew about stuttering. And it just happens that the first four people I have interviewed are all speech pathologists who stutter. It's very common, so very common. So us stutterers have a lot to say.
what are you finding? What is it that you wish your speech pathologist knew?
I think in general, we wish they knew it was okay to talk about stuttering, that you don't have to whisper about stuttering, that it's okay to want to stutter less and stutter with control, but that's not where you start. I mean, tomorrow the topic with Vivian Siskin is fixing the hole before you paint the spot. So working on fluency is just painting the spot, as Vivian says. And then every time it rains, you know, the hole just lets the water through. So we're really looking at the whole person and not just fluency robots.
And by fixing the hole, you mean just allowing yourself the freedom to be who you are.
Yeah.
That's the fix. And beyond that,
the freedom to talk, the freedom to approach people about stuttering, the freedom to be flexible, the choice if you want to change how you talk to change. But to really be, to participate. I pull children out of class to help them do better in class. I'm not helping them if they're so scared of stuttering that they're not talking. So to me, when they stutter in class, they are successful because they're participating.
Peter, it's great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Peter Reitzes, a speech-language pathologist and the host of Stutter Talk, a podcast on stuttering. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, a novel from Liza Wieland about art and life from the perspectives of three diverse characters. Please stay tuned.